Oh, barely. Barely got it. Quick, take Tommy in here in case something horrible happens, like I lose more power. Tommy, get in here!
Oh. So, you're there. You're crazy. A little distorted, but at least you're there.
I am distorted as always, then. Diving into the news! If I'm more unbearable than normal to listen to, then let me know. And let me turn this down. How about that? Is that a little
there,
better?
That's
check,
yeah.
check.
Okay, so here's... You sound almost perfectly abnormal.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. So power went out. We're at the cabin, and then I jumped in the car, came up to the Brick, which is the historic old place up on the corner in Roslyn. I'm all set up. I'm sitting in the corner, and all of a sudden, boom, all the power goes out throughout all of Roslyn. So it's from here all the way into Clallam, and so there's no power whatsoever. The really nice lady that works here, I can't remember her name. She brought me upstairs. I took video of the place. This is the secret spot where people get too drunk to drive home. They get to sleep on the bed that I'm sitting on right now.
Wow.
Can you imagine how gross this mattress is?
So I'm on a couch and you're on a bed. Perfect. Let's doze into the news.
Here we go. Let's dive in. I already have. This is a tragic story. You know, I see all this guy profiled that Como, Seattle is dying. And I saw his mother interviewed. And then did Cairo follow this guy for 2 years?
Yes, 2 years. This is an impressive piece of journalism in that they have 2 years of video of him in his various, and he's very, I mean, as horrible as this story is, he's very charismatic. I mean, there are reasons why a camera wants to follow him. And he came, what ended up happening was as grisly gets. But I understand why he would be, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, like an attractive kind of subject for TV news cameras.
Okay, so this was a 9-minute piece. Congratulations to Cairo 7. In fact, if you see a theme that's developing here, at 4:30, just before Rachel Bell comes on, and I do a thing talking about Muckleshoot Casino, Tom just happens to extemporaneously just, you know, talk about how much he loves Cairo 7. And then we end up doing that story. Now, this is not a thing. It just happens to turn out that this story is so compelling. It wasn't just because of what you read at 4:30, right, Tom?
Right. I mean, I'm sure that I helped create the climate for this story to be received by my excellent delivery. But still, I think most of the work and credit needs to go to Cairo TV.
Let's start with Dave Wagner. Then, Tom, you can tip your hat to him as well. Starting off talking about this guy, Travis Berge.
From the moment Travis Berge arrived in Seattle in 2013, he knew how to attract attention.
Alive inside this tribe, I reside, abiding, green, vibrance, need, time, wandering.
When I came to Seattle, I was really at the height of my musical career as a freestyle rapper, beatboxing, accordionist.
He loved music.
Disease for me are like Pokemon. I gotta catch them all.
He loved meth.
I'm feeling good already.
Even more.
And that's the sound. You know, someone just got high and it's going down.
Oh, hell no.
No, don't do that.
Please stop telling me what to do.
Meth became the constant in Travis Berge's chaotic world.
But then I started stealing a lot. I would just steal from everywhere, really.
Petty crime escalated to 7 years of more serious offenses, including harassment, assault, and the attempted rape of a homeless woman sleeping on Capitol Hill.
Okay, so we're setting up who this guy is. It's, you know, when I watched the piece that was done that and the Como did with him a while ago, I really felt bad for his mother. And watching him, I thought he seems. And this is, don't take this the wrong way.
Yeah,
he seems brilliant.
Yes, he plays.
Do you
to
get
the
that
camera.
Too, Tom? I hate to use that word because people.
Yes.
No, he's a monster. He killed people. He raped people. What he did to that woman, I get that. I think he's tormented by a whole bunch of different things, but I think there's a sort of strange sort of electric genius about him, or at least his ability to connect through the camera, right?
That's right. He knows how to play to the camera. He came here as an entertainer of sorts, and he has that kind of, you know, that awful charisma that people can have. And if it had been directed in a different way, he might not have, you know, in other words, if he had capitalized on that aspect of his personality rather than his addictive aspect of his personality, he could have been something and somebody.
Wagner goes on to talk with Seattle attorney Scott Lindsay about Berge's constant run-ins.
Travis was involved in hundreds or thousands of criminal incidents in his 6 years in Seattle.
Scott Lindsay is an attorney.
It has really, I think, hit Seattle hard.
And the former public safety advisor to Seattle Mayor Ed Murray. He authored the so-called System Failure Report, shining a light on prolific offenders and the breakdown in Seattle's criminal justice system.
Was Travis Burgee the impetus behind the prolific offenders list?
He was the one individual that awakened me to this problem.
False arrest! Haven't given me a reason for detainment!
He was just as prolific a recidivist as I've ever come across in Seattle.
Dude, I could kill you for that.
Travis was a major drain on police resources.
Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law.
Travis openly mocked police.
I go around and look for cops, and once I find cops, then I'll shoot up and I'll be like, best friends.
And boldly defied prosecutors and judges.
Travis had what I consider 100% failure to comply with virtually every single court order, court mandate that he ever faced.
The cops can't even move me.
The whole thing was a game to him, Dave. The whole thing.
When Travis did go to jail, he was off and out within hours.
Why was a guy who caused so much trouble in this area given chance after chance after chance?
Our criminal justice system is designed to enable people who will flout the system. Don't show up for probation. Doesn't matter. Commit a new crime within a week of your last crime. Doesn't matter.
This is why this guy became sort of the poster boy for this, you know, revolving door. And he was so perfect because he didn't care. He just didn't seem to care that freedom was taken away from him. It was just one adventure after another, right, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, he in effect played the system. Now, the system caught up with him, but it caught up with him too late. I assume we have more. I think maybe.
Yeah,
we can
this
have
is
a
Wagner. Wagner
we,
did
yes.
speak to Wagner did speak to a friend of the woman Burgee
killed.
Of his
fiance.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. She was so kind. She was so loving.
Friends find it hard to fathom that Lisa Vaught was engaged to a man like Travis Burgee.
She was intelligent, well-read, compassionate. She was a whole real person.
All right, I'm going to get you guys a head start.
Serena Ross worked with Lisa at Bill Spiedel's underground tours. Lisa ran the gift shop.
She was so creative. She could draw, she could paint.
Serena speculates that a creative connection and a rescue personality may have led Lisa to Travis.
When it comes to domestic violence, once the person is through being charming, they're like a bomb attached to you, and they're going to detonate.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty classic, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, the thing is, now we're venturing in. So domestic violence is a thing. Drug addiction is a thing. You know, being on, you know, high on meth is a thing. All these things, I'm assuming, you know, came together in that one awful week.
Here is the events leading up to that murder.
In July, on the day when the Capitol Hill occupied protest zone was shut down, Travis and Lisa were arrested for failure to disperse.
Yeah.
We were there when they walked out of jail.
She looked so sad, so tired. It was like her spirit was snuffed out.
Once again, Travis got a get-out-of-jail-free card.
It is an absolute miracle that I got out. Somehow, somebody tricked Northwest Community Bail Fund into bailing me out.
2.5 months after walking free,
they knew he was violent.
Travis Burgee reminded Seattle just how dangerous he could be.
He shouted it from the rooftops.
On September 11th, Burgee took to Facebook and bragged about beating Lisa. She's still recovering from me beating the blank out of her the other night. I'm going to be posting all her black eyes with triumphant pride.
How frightened she must have been.
5 days later, Lisa was found in this tent in Cal Anderson Park. Police say she was beaten to death by Travis.
We won't go into the details that I got as to the condition in which the police found her, because there's people listening that don't need to hear about it. But just being described as a monster would certainly be apropos for the state of her body. Burgee also went on to kill himself that evening.
For hours, Travis barricaded himself inside a pumping station. After a long standoff, officers forced their way inside to find Travis dead at the bottom of a tank filled with water and bleach.
That right there is such a sad thing for us in this city. There are so many systems that have been broken, whether, you know, they weren't, you know, whether they didn't serve him properly. And we've got to figure out how we actually make that better.
Whoever kept letting him out, whoever kept reducing the charges, Seattle failed. And if somebody from the prosecutor's office doesn't step up and say, we failed, we'll do better, this will happen again.
Yeah. You can feel the hear the pain in her voice, and unfortunately, she's probably right, don't you think, Tom?
Yes and no. I think this is where it gets really tricky. Is there any more of the clips?
That's
from this
all
thing?
We got okay. from the great work because... from Cairo 7 and Tom Tagney.
Okay. No, yes. Believe me, I don't want to take that much credit, John. I really think the bulk okay. of the work was done by Cairo 7 TV. But now you see why I talk them up every day, right? So, okay. no, because so
why was why won't the... this happen again?
The end of the piece, they talk to the King County Prosecutor's Office and the City Attorney's Office. So that's where we get into kind of the bureaucratic aspect of this horror story. So that's where it gets a little tricky. I think everyone can agree that what happened here was an absolute abomination. However, I don't know what the solution is because, and this, so let me just repeat what this is Cairo 7's work again, John. But the prosecutor said that anytime any felony was brought to them about this Berge fellow, they prosecuted, they convicted, he did his time. Now, the problem here is that mostly the crimes that he was committing were misdemeanors. The weird thing is, the hardest time, I think, you know, the roughest that the criminal justice system was on him was right before his murder. He ended up spending 240 days in jail, 240 days in jail for vandalism of a county building or something. Anyway, and then he gets out. At that point, he had committed a string of misdemeanors. And unless we decide that misdemeanors, if you, let's say you commit 5 misdemeanors or 10 misdemeanors or however many you want to crip to the level of a felony, he's not going to get that much time. So the question is, do we want, one of the things that's cited again in the great Cairo 7 piece is that we do not have the ability to involuntarily commit somebody to a mental health institution and or, you know, drug addiction, that has to be voluntary. Do we want to be able to involuntarily commit our citizens to something that they don't want to agree to? At the level of a misdemeanor, that's where we stand. And even when the system cracked down the hardest and put him in prison for jail for 240 days, he ended up getting out. Anybody who's convicted of a misdemeanor gets out. I mean, a misdemeanor is only a misdemeanor, and that's how we have to kind of adjudicate things. We can change those rules, but that's the system that he kept falling through the cracks in.
Right. So then you say to yourself, okay, so the system, the way it's designed right now, you can have, and I think somebody did this study on this, the list that was left, that there were like 100 people responsible for 3,500
something like that. Yeah.
Crimes, right?
Yes.
Right. Right. So they were like the top 100. So then you say, okay, is society being well served by this system? If the answer is no, then you create a new system. It was John Carlson from KVI that came up with Three Strikes You're Out that some people have some problems with. But basically he got tired of the system going round and round. It would be interesting to see somebody come forward. Now, if this woman that had been killed by Berge was, you know, a suburban housewife from Kent or Auburn or perhaps Issaquah or Sammamish or somebody sort of more tied into the community, would then people start to write to their legislators and say, this has to be done and someone like this Berge guy can't keep doing this? We've basically decriminalized the possession of marijuana, not marijuana, of heroin and meth, any of these controlled substances. We basically have gotten rid of those. We don't prosecute those. Plus, we don't have any sort of system in place for mental illness. This guy falls into that category, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously sick. He is mentally ill, and he's an addict, and he is self-medicating with any kind of street drug he can find. We don't have a system for mental illness. This is the same thing we haven't had since the racer guy. What's his last name again? With an S. His father was on.
Yes, who was saying, I'm trying to get help for my son, and nobody will listen to me.
Right.
Yes.
No one does anything. So, but occasionally these stories come up. Guy came out of, I think it was either the CenturyLink or the Kingdom, stabbed in the chest with scissors. This guy kills this woman. It happens every once in a while, but then we just go on with our life because we don't have a system that wants to be able to crack down because they simply don't have the room, the time, or the money, right?
Yes. And I think the problem is the end result was hellacious, but there are a lot of people that are mentally ill and, addicted that don't, if they just, all they're doing is doing misdemeanors, it doesn't mean that they're going to turn into a killer. In this particular case, it did in the worst possible way. But then that's the question is how many times, you know, by prosecuting somebody who's only committing misdemeanors, is that really the best use of time? In this particular case, it sure would have been because we know what the end result is.
Also, what do we want as a society? Do we want to walk down the street with people that are injecting heroin into their arms at a bus stop at 11 o'clock in the morning? That we have row upon row upon row upon row upon row of tents and people also doing drugs? That there's litter everywhere? That cars are broken into? Is that what we want for a city? If that's what we want for a city, then the system is lax on the enforcement of laws or creating new laws to make a more civil society. Seattle seems to have presented to us the way it would like to go. It's okay with the tents. It's okay with the heroin. We'll just leave that as it is, and let's focus on how bad the cops are.
Well, partly, yeah. Partly is how much.
Have you been in Seattle? Have you been in Seattle recently, Tom? Have you been in Seattle recently? Have you been in Seattle recently?
I live in
the city, the place you used to get the bus. No. The place you used to get the bus and walk around. You've been there recently?
Yeah, actually, I went to my doctor's office. It was not John. Right now, because it's mostly a ghost town, it was not nearly as bad as it used to be. But that's not because we've solved the problem. It's just because the pandemic has made downtown less busy. But yeah, I was there at my doctor's office, 6 weeks ago?
And how was everything? Because people at Cairo 7 are concerned about you. How was everything? Get the doctor okay?
It was really relatively quiet. I walked to my doctor's office, no problem. In fact, it felt kind of cleaned up the city. There was nobody down there.
All right, Tracy Taylor's got to look at traffic. It must be nasty. Oh, it's been a crazy, crazy afternoon already, and we'll keep you updated on traffic and the high wind warning in place. And I'm doing the show from I can't even begin to describe it, although I believe Jacob did put up the video. Tom, if I am found, if my body is found, remember, I lit up a room except for this particular room, okay?
Yeah, that's all right. Even without power, you lit up a room.
Thank you, Tom. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. That is the State Roof text line. That is the place to go to get in touch with us. Do love hearing from you about all topics. Except for one we're not allowed to talk about. Okay, let's get to the fact that talk radio is turning millions of Americans into conservatives. Good news. I don't know why we didn't start with this one.
because we've already had a down enough day.
Is that what it is? Don't have to say about 11 million people.
I love this article.
What do you like about this article?
Because I found it very enlightening and informative.
Oh, yeah.
So, but go ahead. You can kind of lead the discussion.
Well, about 11 million people tune in to talk radio. It is a conservative point of view. It is where people go that are on the road, windshield time, people that are listening to the show right now. You would be in this category. They sort of take you through Rush Limbaugh's beginning in the 80s and the idea that there was supposed to be equal time amendment that had been kicked out there a couple of times that was actually in place. That if somebody says something political from one point of view, then the government said, well, then the other point of view has to be
the fairness
available as well. Yeah, fairness doctrine. Well, thank God that went away. And because it went away, Rush Limbaugh was able to take off and run with that and then really set a standard by which other people then followed. The Lars Larsons and Glenn Beck and everybody else does talk radio. Conservative points of view are expressed over the radio, AM and FM dial for people, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day of original content.
So many interesting details about this. The 15 talk radio, the top 15 talk radio programs, there's only one that leans left. So they say it's not monolithically conservative, but overwhelmingly so,
yeah.
Which I found fascinating. And what they suggest is that the conservatism of talk radio is not the conservatism of the Republican Party, or at least the Washington think tanks and the Republican right. Party magazines and all that. And that distinction I found fascinating, that this, the talk radio phenomenon is really more like Trump. Mm-hmm. That they see themselves, they're not into free markets and small government as much as they're focused on ethno-nationalism and populism. So that Rush Limbaugh has created kind of like a side army of conservatives that sometimes supplements and sometimes complements and sometimes occasionally clashes with the establishment Republicans. And that the bottom line is the talk radio adherent is much more a Trump supporter, I guess Trumpian is seen as an insult, but a Trump person than they are, say, a Mitch McConnell person, which makes a lot of sense. And that they say they have an outsized, they compared them to the NRA. The NRA has outsized influence on our electorate. They only have 5 million members. But because they're so intensely passionate about that one particular single issue topic, they have an outsized influence. Talk radio has 3 to 4 times as many people as the NRA does, and they also have an outsized influence on their number because they're so passionately intense about what they're doing, and that helps explain Donald Trump to a lot of degrees, much to the chagrin of some traditional Republicans. Uh-huh. It might be the talk radio listeners that helped propel Donald Trump, which I think is fascinating way to look at that.
He was on, 2 hours, almost 3 hours with Rush Limbaugh the other day. The idea of populism is it's the quality of appealing to ordinary people, that the ordinary people, the working Joes and Josephines that drive in the car and do work every single day, either with their hands, their back, their mind as well, but they themselves, they're not into Mitch McConnell, and they don't care about William F. Buckley, and they don't know about you know, what's happening with the Heritage Foundation.
That's not it.
Fox, right? It's Fox News, and it's everybody that's, it's Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson has gone from the guy that used to wear a bow tie and try to sort of make himself off as sort of an Ivy League younger William F. Buckley, but without the clipboard and the pen in his mouth. He
and
now
vocabulary.
Has moved into, right, and oh my God, the vocabulary. He has moved into a position of, as a populist, to be able to speak for the common man who feels his voice isn't heard in all the insanity. And the reason it is so successful today is because the news media has completely taken off the veil of we're not biased. They have now played the card to the point that everybody realizes, oh, we know what NBC is, CBS, ABC. The reason Rush Limbaugh is popular and other places are popular, because the outlet for conservative voice that is shunned or at least not respected in the mainstream media is heard over these airwaves.
Okay, now wait a minute, though. You're starting to blur things. Tucker Carlson, that's TV. They get this argument is that Fox News, Fox TV gets more credit than it deserves, that it's really the Rush Limbaugh talk radio audience that created this phenomenon. And I think Tucker Carlson's a perfect example. Tucker Carlson was an anti-Trump guy. And he was more of this intelligentsia, the right-wing intelligentsia, Ivy League, bow tie, George Will kind of Republican Party guy. And he's had to transform himself into a pro-Trump populist, even though that wasn't how he started out. And I think the key is we've got to keep this with radio rather than TV. And one of the things they talk about is it's segregated by class. Their argument is what talk radio reaches, unlike TV, is the blue collar worker. And I thought this is fascinating because I don't listen to podcasts either, but they say, and the white collar complement to talk radio for blue collar workers is the podcast. And I thought, wow, yeah, that says a lot, I think, that white collar people listen to podcasts and blue collar people tend to listen to talk radio. And that's what's so influential. And the reason populism is so important is that they feel like the elite institutions, the media, universities, government, big tech, that's what you're talking about, John. They're run by these liberal gatekeepers.
By the elites.
And so by the elites. And so they shake their fist at them in such a manner. This I thought was a great line, that they're more likely to vote for someone who they think will fight back even if they lie along the way. I don't even think Trump supporters think that Trump doesn't lie all the time, but that's okay because he's fighting the bigger lie, which is the institutions.
I'll give you an example of so the people, if you drive by work sites, they've got Cairo Radio on. And the other day, when I said what I liked about what Culp said was, I don't want to run your family. I don't want to run your business. I don't want anything to do with that. I'm the executive that's running the state of Washington according to the Constitution. And you said, quote, when I heard that, I just wanted to pat him on the head and say, oh, there. Oh, isn't that nice? Tom, I've had more people, of everything you've ever said on the air, more people were upset by that. But they said that is indicative of the way liberals think conservatives are nothing more than children. And it's the people that listen to this show and other shows like Dory's and anyone else that is conservative say, thank God Cairo Radio is on the air.
Yes, but the thing is
because people like you want to pat people on the head that believe in being able to make decisions on their own as opposed to big government coming along and making it for them.
Yes, and yet you've said things worse about Trump. And the interesting thing about that is that's the only person I referred to it as. I think conservatives can be really smart and sharp and know all these kinds of things. I was surprised at how little he seemed to understand about the big issues of the day, like climate change and those kinds of things. I only applied it to him. So, yes.
Okay. All right. I think I hear music. All righty. Here we go, everybody. Wild afternoon. Jacob, did you get a chance to put up the video of where I am?
I did.
In case police can't find my body?
Okay. Yeah, there's evidence. There's a paper trail.
It's a... I never knew. I've come to the Brick so many times. It's here in Roslyn. I didn't know there was a second floor where drunk people go, or if bands are going to perform, they come up here and looks like...
I'm concerned,
it's the
John.
Green room.
They might not want you broadcasting about the secret room that they have. Have you checked with them?
Well, let me tell you, it's not easy to get up to the secret room. There's a lot of, it's, believe me, it's not, you just don't walk in and say, I want to go to the secret room. All right? Leave it at that.
Well, now that you've broadcast from there, it's going to be a tourist hotspot.
I realize there's something else, Jacob. By the way, the other video I've sent you that you just said, it's too much work for me, I'm not doing it. Don't put that up. I realize what a horrible thing that would be to put that up. I could get in a heck of a lot of trouble. Okay?
Good to know.
Good. I want to see it at least. If we don't post it, at least I can describe it in detail.
No, I don't need that happening. All right. I found this piece, and Jacob's like, that's an old story. I don't even know if we have time for it. In the remaining 2 minutes, can we do it yes or no, Jacob? Yes.
Absolutely.
Or no?
Yes, we can do it.
Okay. How do you achieve goals? You have to create an enemy in order to be able to get to where you want to be.
This is ridiculous. This happens in sports.
Wait, there's sound.
All the time.
There's sound on this, Tom.
I know there's sound. I was leading up to it, but go ahead, play the sound. Or not.
Now you say they a lot. Who is they? What do you mean? Who are they?
Please, Ellen, stay away from them. Stay away from them.
I want to know who they are to stay away from.
They is the person that told you you would never have an Ellen show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they is that one person in a room when you get a raise and that one person in the corner be like, man, I hate that person. You know what I'm saying? They are the people that that don't believe in you, you know, that say that you won't succeed. You know what I'm saying? So we stay away from they. And, you know, they never wanted me on the Ellen show. And look at me, I'm on the Ellen show. You know what I'm saying? I missed the number one show. Mama, I made it.
DJ Kelly letting everybody know he made it. And the reason that they is who, Tom? It's the enemy.
The enemy. So here's the argument that's being made here. This happens more in sports than anything else. You could have a two-time defending national champion or the NBA champs, and they say, yeah, people told us we couldn't do it. What do you mean? You've got five superstars on your team. How could you not do it? Yeah, but no one believed in us except us. We're the only people to believe. You create fictional enemies, and they're called scapegoats, and it's what gives you drive and purpose to do something that you normally wouldn't want to do. You don't think I can do this? I'll show you. I'm going to do it. And they say that it's basically just a trick of the mind to get to accomplish something. John Curley, you're never going to have a top radio show. Maybe you could be Pretty Boy on TV, but you're never going to have a top radio show. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll show you what.
All
it's
right,
that
then.
Kind of
all
stuff.
Right. I'll, okay, then. Goodbye.
Yes. Well, you can just, yeah, you can give up. I mean, there is that curly tendency too. But in general, you want to overcome and you crazy. And the downside is sometimes it's called scapegoating in a dark way. If you scapegoat other individuals, it's his fault or her fault.
It's interesting that you think this is malarkey because I live this.
Of course you do. But it's effective. It's malarkey, but it's effective malarkey because it drives you to be your best.
But, I mean, races, 5K races and half marathon and marathon, somebody would pass me. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, really? I saw the way you looked at me when you went by me. The guy was, like, probably choking at his own vomit. I'm like, oh, yeah? Oh, really? Well, then you are mine. And then I just follow him. I just trace right behind him the entire race. And then finally I catch him at the end and lean him out.
Way to go, John. I know why you like this article. Who's your enemy right now, John? Do you have an enemy right now?
No, I don't. I'm getting soft. I need something. No, I'll give a quick example. I got hired to do an auction down in Sonoma, and they said to me, last year we had three guys do your job. It was 97 lots. And I said, you don't need three. It's me. I'll sell every lot in 43 seconds. I'll sell 97 lots in under 3 hours. I don't even know who those other guys were. I watched them online, and I hated them. I'm sure they're very nice guys. And I said, I will show you I can sell every lot in 43 seconds. I don't need a break. And I was basically, I use them as a way of, if I don't do better, they're going to take the job from me next year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which isn't necessarily the case, but you proved to yourself that you can overcome those fake enemies.
As far as it is, as far as concerned, they're right behind me, Tom. On the mattress.
And they're gaining on you.
Yes, always. All right, let's check traffic.